Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Adam Hogg says,
they do have a really fast receiver room now. They have the speed, but I'm a big believer that you have to be able to play wide receiver too. There's a difference. You can't just put a bunch of track stars out there.
Adam Hoag.
Great question, Dan.
Bears insider for NBC Sports Chicago.
Here's what I can tell you about what the Bears were doing.
Host of the Hoag and Johns podcast.
It's not just this spot. It is left tackle too. They put all their chips in on a rookie that had back problems in college last year. Okay, even if these are new symptoms, that was risky.
Adam Hoag with Bernstein and Rahimi.
All right, go Bears.
On the Score.
Adam Hoag is at Adam Hoag on Twitter. He's got the Bears beat for NBC Sports Chicago, half of the Hoag and Johns podcast. He's with us on the Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Adam, hey, how's it going, man?
Good morning. Happy Friday.
Thank you. I'm trying to figure out whether or not this game sets up for a potential reasonable Pyrrhic victory. Because the spread's so high, and because we're kind of down on the Bears after last week, is it possible the Bears could lose, but if Justin Fields has himself a nice game and if they compete well enough, could we come away from this feeling generally positive? I hate to be that defeatist. I hate to sound like a loser, but I'm just trying to be realistic that there may be opportunities to win in losing.
Yeah, I think it's possible. I mean, I don't cover the Patriots, but when they played the Bucs a few weeks ago and played them really tough, as crazy as that was, considering the circumstances of that game with Tom Brady, it seemed like a somewhat of a moral victory for the Patriots. But where I'm careful with that is they're still a 2-4 team right now, and things aren't really seeming that great in New England. So you got to kind of be careful where, I mean, I get where you're coming from with the question, mm-hmm. But it still counts as a loss. And I think like it all depends the circumstances, right? So yeah, the picture you painted, if the Bears get in a game, and I do think that this is a defense, as much as the Bucs run defense has been talked up this week, like this defense isn't outstanding for Tampa Bay. I mean, I would expect the Bears to be able to move the football. And honestly, I'll be a little bit disappointed if Justin Fields doesn't take positive strides this week.
Good.
But if that happens, it's good. That's where we got to keep things in perspective a little bit. That we talked about this before the season started. If this is a 500 team, somewhere around 500, and Justin Fields, you end the season and Justin Fields looks like he's going to be the future of the organization still, and things are pointed up there, then it's a successful season. It just is. So it doesn't feel good when you lose to the Packers again and you're all of a sudden you got Aaron Rodgers picking on you and then Tom Brady's piling on and you're 1-6 against the Packers if you're Matt Nagy now at this point. Like, that stuff's not good. But things tend to change week to week, and we'll see how it goes on Sunday. I tend to think it's not going to be pretty, though.
Yeah, separating the Justin Fields piece of this aside, and you did your film study for NBC Sports Chicago, so I definitely want to get into that. But before that is, I think, the key point here that this is as big of a test for the Bears' defense as anything. And when you talk about Jalen Johnson and trying to measure his progress, the combination of Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, Antonio Brown is something to pay attention to. You know, if Akeem Hicks isn't playing, how are we going to see that pass rush form? Khalil Mack had a tremendous game last year against the Bucs. Does that continue? That's what I'm really here to see, is I think they don't win this game. But how are we measuring Justin Fields' progress, and how are we going to look at this defense to really assess them?
Yeah, I mean, the challenge on defense is going to be huge, as you said. I mean, especially if they don't have Robert Quinn. And we'll see. I mean, he theoretically could be back by Sunday, but, you know, that's probably going to be determined by tomorrow. But your Akeem Hicks, things aren't looking great the way he left that game the other day. Hasn't been practicing. You know, I'd even go stretch further. Even Jakeem Grant, as a returner, has, you know, he left that game and he hasn't been practicing. So what's his status? It just seems like the Bears, it's just one of those weeks, I feel like. And I wrote about this in a column that
well
went up.
Said. I know exactly what you mean by that.
Please explain for the rest of us, because you two have just a mind meld.
I wrote this column on NBCSportsChicago.com because it's just a week of distractions. It just is. And it actually started last week with Damian Williams going on the COVID list, Mike Furry going on the COVID list. And then this week it just got worse. Now, the thing about distractions are you're always going to have some of them. You can't control them all. Like, we're still living in a world with a pandemic right now. So you're not going to get through the whole season without some issues there. But then there's the other ones that you seemingly can control or shouldn't have, which is like your highest paid, one of the highest paid safeties in the league going after one of the best tacklers in the franchise's history about tackling, like such nonsense the day after a game for Eddie Jackson to do that. And then to have Jalen Johnson get fined for such a routine thing. It seemed like people wanted to go after Matt Nagy for fining Jalen Johnson for being late. Any team does that. Any coach does that. It's like, it's like 101 to show up on time for any player. And then so to go and then post that to social media, just silly. Like are these small cracks in the foundation? Because otherwise, and I think as much as Matt Nagy obviously deserves criticism for many things, specifically on offense, I have stood firm that for the most part, he's done a really good job holding this team together and doing some of the glue stuff that a head coach has to do as a leader. And I'm just wondering, is it just a bad week? Because it feels like that. It's just been a weird week. But what happens if you get killed by the Bucs on Sunday? Like, do the things start to add up? Like, what are the distractions going to be like next week? And I don't know. Maybe they come out and they play well or get that moral victory you're talking about, and all of a sudden it stops. But this is a team, let's not forget, that lost four games in a row 2 years ago and six games in a row last year. Nagy managed to hold it together. But if you have a long losing streak for the third year in a row, like, when does it start to fall apart? I don't know. I just think it's time that we acknowledge the fact that I think they're entering a very crucial stretch for the head coach, in my opinion, over the next month.
I brought this up yesterday or the day before. I'm sorry, I don't remember. And you made reference to the distraction of the Bears being a punchline in this sort of ongoing reality show of middle-aged celebrity quarterbacks. To go from what is going to be an iconic on-field quarterbacking exclamation of, I've always owned you, to then have Tom Brady come out, hey, congratulations, Aaron Rodgers is part owner of the Bears, yuck, yuck, yuck. I know at some level of this, or I don't know if it's Virginia herself or anybody in the McCaskey family, that stings, that there are things that matter to them on that level. There is a real, and you can say what you want as a fan or your relationship with a team, but that family does have a real pride in their standing as a heritage brand and take pride in the Halas name. That they don't like that. And maybe you don't feel the immediate effect of it, but there could be a layering or lingering effect of being in that position. I know that there are people in the organization who really seethe when the Bears become the butt of jokes.
Yeah, and look, and we know that they don't like losing to the Packers. You know, it's played a part in the last three head coaches getting fired. I mean, Lovie Smith for a while was doing pretty well against the Packers. The Bears had a stretch where they went 7-3 against Green Bay. That was a long time ago now. But once that flipped, that certainly played a role in why he was fired after a 10-6 season. And then Trestman had his struggles. John Fox had his struggles. And Matt Nagy's done pretty well against the NFC North, except for the Packers. And like I said, he's 1-6. To on top of that, have the guy who actually does own you just straight up say it. And also not just say it to the players, but to the fans in the stands. I just don't think that the optics of it are good. And then to have Tom Brady, and it seemed like just like sort of an innocent joking banter, and Brady's maybe gotten better at that over the last few seasons. It seems like he's been more on social media and things like that. But
now he's a comedy robot.
Yeah, exactly. But so,
hey,
you know, he
would be Ginger if you had to live under Bill Belichick's thumb your life too, you know.
So, you know, he was going for a cheesy punchline or something like that. But you know what? It's still at the Bears' expense. And it felt like even early on in the season, with the constant chatter on a daily basis on the national television shows about how they weren't handling the Justin Fields thing correctly, it just was piling up. And then you have the Cleveland game. And then it's just like everybody's firing on Matt Nagy. And now you're dealing with this from actual future Hall of Fame quarterbacks, two of the best we've ever seen. It just feels like it's adding up, doesn't it? And yep. I'm with you on, like, you could say, like, they're the butt of the jokes, but it also feels like a level of disrespect, doesn't it? Like, the Bears brand right now just doesn't carry a lot of respect around the league right now. And I don't know what worse way to feel that than having Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers start piling on.
Well, this whole schedule is considered the toughest in the league by many. And this is a part of it that we knew was going to be painful regardless, and here we are sitting in it. But the other thing to me is this whole brand that you tried to create with your head coach was offense, an offensive guru, in stark contrast to what the GM seems to be the best at, which is picking defensive talent, hitting on running back talent. We saw the lack of resources go into the offensive line. I think Jason Peters deserves a gold star every week for doing what he's doing, because I don't think any of us expected this. But the whole idea being offense, 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 you know, tell me about like your wall of play cards and the one you hold in your hand, and then you manage one net passing yard against the Browns. You have that terrible game on Sunday Night Football. Everybody's watching you because you made the right draft move, but you're not capitalizing on the field.
Well, and here's the other thing, too, is I'm sure there's probably somebody listening to this right now with the Bears that's going like, hey, wait a minute. You know, we just had one of our best wins in a long time against the Raiders just a week and a half ago. We lost one game against the Packers, who are a pretty good team, and Aaron Rodgers. Like, we're still a 3-3 team with a tough schedule. The wins against the Raiders and the Bengals are pretty decent, actually, when you look at it. And I get it. Like, I get that side of it, and that's true. But this kind of goes back to the John Fox thing, what he used to always say, crisis versus carnival, based on whether you win or lose a game. Well, it's just – maybe it is just a bad week. I don't know. But I start to look at the schedule, and I'm just sort of worried about where this is going to go. Like, that's it's – we don't have to repeat ourselves over again, but it's like you lose to the Packers and then all these things. It's like every day there's been something this week that's just made it worse. And, oh, by the way, you're staring at the Buccaneers on Sunday and you're a 12.5-point underdog. So for me, I'm just bringing this up all more as from like avoiding the crisis from getting even worse, which could very well happen when you consider if you lose to Tampa, you know, it doesn't get any easier with the 49ers coming to town. From there, and then you go on the road to Pittsburgh. Now, those are two winnable games.
And then you face Baltimore.
And then you face Baltimore. But that's sometimes winnable games are actually worse, because when you lose them, they feel that much worse. They bring, you know, like, are we really going to be killing? Back to your point, Dan, if the Bears play okay Sunday and lose by like 7 or 8 points, Is it going to be the end of the world? I don't know. But it could be worse the following week if you lose a heartbreaker to the 49ers in a game you should have won.
All depends on Fields to me. And the other guy who's really in the spotlight right now, we talked about it in the previous segment, Sean Desai's comments bolstering Eddie Jackson. And I know the questions were direct, but it did seem like he felt he had to expend a little bit of capital in trying to prop up Eddie Jackson. I think it was a little, some of it was just not believable to me when he says, hey, it's hard to play safety in this defense. The whole idea of going to Sean Desai, of getting back to Vic Fangio principles, was in large part an Eddie Jackson reclamation project. So to now say, well, we're asking a lot of him is pretty difficult. I'm sorry. I'm not swallowing all of that entirely right now. And they seem like they're trying to tell you that he's doing better than he was and things aren't exactly what we see. I would love to know internally how concerned they are about him needing to raise his level of play and what this week means for him overall as a Bear.
Oh, I think internally there's some frustration there. There has to be. Look, Sean Desai can be right about that in some of the things that Eddie Jackson does that, coverage-wise, that forces the teams to go, opposing offenses to go a different direction. That can be true. But at the end of the day, you gave this guy a massive contract to get his hands on the football and to not miss tackles. Like, that's at the top of the list of things you got to do. And he's not getting his hands on the football. And he's not making game-changing plays. And he's missing at least one tackle a week, it seems like, sometimes more. And it's not even just the missed tackles. It's, in many cases, he's not even trying to wrap up. He's just throwing his body or his shoulder into a guy. And then, you know, at least on Sunday, he was able to get enough of Davante Adams that it caused him to lose his balance and force him to step out of bounds. But we've seen him just completely whiff on some of those. So, you know, I think that that's a coach in a press conference, and I think Sean Desai is showing us pretty early on that he's going to go to bat for his players. He also pointed out that the tackling needs to be better and didn't necessarily make any excuses in that regard for Eddie Jackson. So I think that that was something worth pointing out, too. There's got to be frustration right now. And I would imagine there's even some frustration for how he handled himself, too, after the game. And I'd also like to point out, too, that this is a guy who hasn't talked after a single loss this year.
Wow.
You know, he came in that – he didn't talk – or he had no problem talking after the Raiders game. But and I'm talking about even during the week. I'm not just talking about after the game. So, I don't know. We'll see if he talks today at Halas Hall. But that's something, too, that I think from an accountability standpoint – okay, one week here or there, one loss here and there, fine. But when it starts, we're into week 7 now. Like, that is, to me, something from accountability standpoint that matters.
And then I do want to get to what you had to say about the 10-play, 80-yard touchdown drive that Fields led. Because you did do your film study for NBC Sports Chicago, and you had a lot of key points in there that I think reflect some progress out of Justin Fields for the people who think that they didn't see enough last week. What were they?
So, first of all, let me point out that I was a little bit even taken aback on Monday when Nagy came to the press conference with all these, like, notes and positive things to break down about Fields. And I even, in the middle of the press conference, had to stop and ask a question, like, wait a minute here. If the quarterback's getting so much better and you have a running game, then why are you still not scoring points, right? Because it's like...
Yes.
Let's not pretend that this was some, amazing offensive game. That being said, you know, everything Nagy did say and break down from those three sequences of plays that he did bring to the press conference Monday, I went back and once the All-22 was available and watched it, you know, that last drive, that last scoring drive in the fourth quarter was impressive. And for a number of different reasons, including something Nagy brought up, which was like they had to have it, right? They had to have it. The Packers punter had just uncorked an 82-yard punt, which was ridiculous, getting a touchback, and the Bears starting back at their own 20 to start a must-have drive. And on top of that, they had some negative plays within the drive, including...
Sam Mustafa was I'm trying to think, he threw it off his own butt?
That was earlier in the game.
Okay.
Yeah. But that was also another example.
Right.
Like, that was a negative.
I think you brought that up, yeah.
That was early in the game. Yeah. That was on the first scoring drive. And those are the type of negative plays that in the past, even just recent past, with Matt Nagy's offenses, one false start that backs you up 5 yards kills a drive. Or the false starts out of timeouts, you know, delay of games, things
like
that.
That's their signature. Any other team does that, they owe the Bears money.
Well, yeah, I won't even bring up the timeout before the challenge call. Like, that's I can't today. I just can't.
Yeah. So,
you watch too much Blackhawks hockey to have to deal with that.
Yeah. I just was like, oh, maybe they'll get a lead, and then I'll joke about time how long they led for, and then they just didn't.
All right. So, Adam, we're running a little bit late here. Do you have a crystallized thought on the probabilities for this game? Because it's a tough one.
Yeah, I don't have much probability of them winning. I just think it's a tough matchup. I think it's a bad week with some of these injuries, and I'll take Tom Brady anytime. And I'm even leaning towards, I think the Buccaneers covered that number. Maybe the Bears hang around for a little bit. And also, let me say this. I think Justin Fields has some success. I on our podcast, I said, hey, I think he actually accounts for 3 touchdowns in this game. Right. I'm more worried about the defense, and I think Tom Brady and the Bucs end up scoring over 30 points.
That's 21 points. That's
with him. If it's 30 and 21, then we're sort of right on that number there. Anyway, Adam, thank you, sir.
All right, guys. Have a good one.
Thanks, Adam.
That's Adam Hogue. We've got a sort of a Bears catch-all segment coming next. Now, there's a lot
Bears
of things.
Bears potpourri.
We would have pop around. Yeah, if it were a Jeopardy category, that's what it would be. Because Bill
we
Lazor
can't talk
talked
about Jeopardy this week.
Sorry.
Not after Aaron Rodgers.
Sorry. And there was another aspect to the reclamation of the Bucs offense that occurred after they lost to the Bears and after they had some time to think about what they were doing and how they were doing it. In some ways, the Bears might have been partially responsible for them eventually winning the Super Bowl. So, yay. That's next. More Bears on the Score.
Bernstein and Rahimi, 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
It's Bears Friday as we get you ready for them to be the marquee national game against the Super Bowl champions on CBS with Jim Nantz and Tony Romo on the call. You know, we were talking earlier about why Tony Romo isn't giving you those pre-snap predictions anymore. A texter surmises that now that you can gamble on run or pass before a play, that depending on who's getting those bets in when and how quickly, that could obviously change things. If the broadcaster is telling you what it's more likely to be before, it could affect the betting.
Yeah, Rick Camp talked about that too. Rick, what was your reply to the texter?
Just that it's not like Romo's doing it 30 seconds ahead of time. And the thing is, too, I think part of the reason that the network might not be thinking of that as much is, I could be wrong, but I don't believe it's your legal books that are offering that. That might be like an offshore type thing.
Okay.
So it's not like, you know, any of the books that we're familiar with around here are offering that. And considering he's doing that within more likely than not like 5 seconds of the snap, just in terms of how long it
too
takes
hard.
To. Yeah, it's just
it's
too hard.
It's not even
to
that
do.
Sometimes. It's like a second and a half to two.
Yeah. So like I get the thought process. It's not a bad thought process. However, I just think logistically not really realistic.
We heard from Sean Desai a little bit ago. What about his counterpart on offense and everything we've been discussing about how hard it is to run against Tampa Bay? The Bears still want and need to run the ball. How do we reconcile these things?
Well, I think some of it we'll all know as we know how the game goes. You know, some of it you can plan and predict, and some of it you have to play the game as it plays out. But I wouldn't take away credit from their defensive front by saying that it's all because their offense scores. I think we know a lot of these players who've been around the league for a while on defense, and that they're very good players, and we know that the kind of scheme that they run, and certainly it's a formidable job trying to run the ball against them.
That was a very polite way of saying this is going to be difficult.
Run away from strength, run at speed. That means you run away from that interior. And I would like, I've said this before, I'd like to see real power run. Allen Robinson is a good blocker.
Yes.
You know who else is? Darnell Mooney. They're both good blockers. Get the numbers. Get guys outside. Run sweeps. Run G lead. Get people, run traps outside. Get guys moving. Get the numbers and force this second. Backups of backups in this secondary over and over, make them tackle, and then boom, hit them on that backside with some Justin Fields stuff.
Yeah, that we talk a lot about the Bears injury report being hefty, but you have a good point, Dan. When we see who hasn't been practicing, I mentioned Antonio Brown. He didn't participate, but hey, Allen Robinson didn't participate all last week, and he ended up playing. But Lavonte David not participating in practice on Thursday. Rob Gronkowski listed as not participating in practice. And then you've got more on the defensive side of the ball, like Jason Pierre-Paul didn't practice. We know about Richard Sherman. Antoine Winfield was a full participant, but he had that concussion injury. We keep an eye on that as well. So there are chances here for the Bears to make some strides. But the question to me is not if they're going to win the game or not. It's, are you going to work on some plays you need to work on against really formidable opponents training with Justin Fields? Like putting together that drive. That wasn't a garbage time drive last week. And that's why I bring it up as a real note here. But to me, I know you're hopeful. I think they still lose and pretty handily. And that offense is going to get stuffed.
It could, unless we get a little bit of Justin Fields magic when things break down. And sometimes if your scramble rules are there and he can buy himself a little bit of time, that's when you can find an inexperienced or under-talented defensive back who just gets caught looking upfield for one moment too long. And it doesn't take much for a guy to get behind him and that ball to be delivered. So I just want to be entertained on Sunday. I want Justin Fields to take some strides. I'm not gonna set my bar too high, but I do think that if in fact some of these key guys don't play, the Bears might be able to keep this competitive for longer than we expect.
I appreciate your optimism.
I'm allowed. Second week in a row, I'm not going to be optimism shamed.
What happens against the 49ers?
I don't know.
Yeah. how long are you going to keep this up?
I'm not the one who makes predictions. You are. You are the one that makes Bears predictions.
Cody asked us if we wanted to do staff predictions, and I said yes because I like Cody.
And then you.
And then I replied all to the email yesterday.
But everybody loved it.
Yeah, I woke up and I was like in bed listening to the show Molly and Haw in the morning as I got ready for work, and I was like, oh, I got to do that prediction thing. So I'm like sitting there in the dark looking at my phone, and I'm like, So I gave the score first, and then
did you fall asleep reading Cormac McCarthy by any chance?
No.
Okay.
Random. This is what I said. I'm 5-1 on the season. The only loss I had, my prediction, was the Raiders game. Buccaneers 31, Bears 13. Because, you know, they averaged just under 17 per. And I go, picture it. The year is 2029. Tom Brady is 52 and still connected with Rob Gronkowski. No age. For touchdowns while the two are endorsing AARP incentives. Brady reminds everyone about the one time he hit rock bottom, forgetting what down it was and losing to the Bears in 2020. Brady also controls the world's avocado supply in this dystopia. Avocados are $12 each. Meanwhile, the Bears have started 6 quarterbacks since drafting Justin Fields, but Chicagoans still don't know the lengths of the contracts of Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy. Construction is picking up at the Arlington Heights site. See.
The Midday Midway is next. I have auction items from Star Wars.
From Star Wars?
From Star Wars.
I have Little Debbie ice cream from Ice Cream.
That's next on the score.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
1-2.
Midway, the most important of the year.
3-4.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
5-6-7-8.
Our objective is Midway.
9-10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and Rahimi. Middays 9 a.m. to noon on the score.
It's the Midday Midway on Friday, which is the unofficial time to start drinking.
If you're like,
I'm declaring it that. I've just decided if you want.
This scotch dinner has gone to your head.
Well, that's the idea. But
I think it was supposed to go to your stomach and be digested partially by your liver.
I think it went to both. But the liver was digested by the liver because the foie gras, the puck of foie gras that was crusted on the outside in shaved black truffle. Oh my God. I mean, it's like you just want to weep.
Keep it.
Is this peak Dan when Dan is talking about something that even he thinks is bougie?
Wait.
Relatable Dan.
Wait, keep it on that? You wouldn't?
I mean, I have not. So that's the big old caveat there that I have not had before. However, not really itching to try it either.
We just wanted
a Kurter burger, man. Like, that's Rick and I are
I should have saved a sliver of it. And that's like a just, you know, close your eyes and put that on the back of your tongue and then just let it sit for the, you know, for the next 5 minutes and let it melt right there.
It's sea bass.
That's the shit. Okay. I didn't tell that on the air, did I?
No.
I know we don't have to, but briefly, just a quick one off here. First of all, you know, Shane is in a room with, like, this is a high profile room. This is literally guys flying in on private jets just for this dinner.
So they're your friends.
And I don't know. So
Shane.
So, and Shane's having, and look, Shane also, first of all, is a really, really more knowledgeable food person than I am by leaps and bounds, and a more knowledgeable scotch and spirits person than I am. So he's really, he should feel perfectly comfortable. And they bring out one of the courses. This was the Robata grilled sea bass and a sweet corn miso with edamame, peppers, and pea shoots that was paired with the Macallan rare cask. And Shane is big into plating, and he's been watching videos about plating now because he's learning about it. So he takes the sea bass, and he's looking at it from various angles and sort of turning it in the light. And the head of catering from the restaurant group walks over and just, like, very sort of patronizingly mansplains to him. He goes, "That's sea bass." And the look on Shane's face was a pure ire.
And now you know what it's like to be me every day.
And he said, "I know it's sea bass. I was looking at how it was plated." And it's like the guy felt he had to come over and tell Bluto what was on his plate. So I made some joke of, like, "Hey, your short ribs in here look pretty funny." And he's like, "Huh?
Why didn't you do that in Ed Ogeron voice?
I got short ribs in here. I'm funny right now. I'm going to bring it in the back.
We got fish in the ocean.
We got a special thing called a fish in the ocean for somebody like that."
but it was just one of those moments where, like, Shane, it's okay, man. And that guy was like, he was fish splaining, you know?
That's going to ruin his weekend.
I know.
Things are ruined his week. Yeah. Yeah. It was, he was like talking to himself after that. It was great. But that's not why you called. We have Little Debbie snack cakes for us.
Yeah. So, in a much different genre of food, Little Debbie has announced that they're going to do Christmas tree cake ice cream coming to stores. Ooh. It's going to happen in November at Walmart stores nationwide. A little place called Walmart. Maybe you've heard of it. And here's the description. The flavor features a creamy white cake ice cream base, pound cake pieces, green sprinkles, and a red frosting swirl. So they announced that it would be collaborating with Hudsonville Ice Cream to produce the new flavor. And the ice cream is a revamped version of the Little Debbie Christmas tree cake snack, which first hit shelves in 1985.
You know, we were not a Little Debbie family growing up. We were a Hostess family. And if I wanted Nutty Buddies, I think they called them Nutty Bars at the time, I would have to trade for them. It's just not something that was ever on my mom's shopping radar screen.
Loved Little Debbie. Like, the oatmeal cream pie is like the greatest
thing
of all time.
That's the Nick Saban, right?
Is it?
It's breakfast.
Isn't the oatmeal bar? Yeah. That's a Nick's. He eats two of them every day for breakfast.
Now, upstairs in the kitchen that we have, they have the double decker oatmeal cream pie.
Wait, what? Yeah. Why am I sitting here right now? How have I not known this?
Maybe when I went up there today, I noticed there were two left.
Maybe.
What?
Mind you, I left them because I had already had breakfast.
Well, then make them a snack. Was it also the same?
I might. But there's also Twix up there, and I really like Twix.
Ooh, which one? Twix or right Twix?
Yes.
I bought a double Twix the other day.
What is that? Twix is inherently double.
No, this was a double-double. We were at 7-Eleven.
Quadruple?
We ate at Pete's Pizza.
It would be a quadruple.
We had a huge meal at Pete's Pizza. I'm like, I need dessert. And so we walked right to the 7-Eleven, and I grabbed the first Twix I saw, and it was double-double. It was four.
That's a quadruple.
It was a four-pack.
That's just a king size, then? It might be their king size.
I think it is a king size, but it was good.
I
had that much more of it.
They like make these extra big sizes of the chocolates, and then sometimes you get the double Twix, but it's a double, so it's quadruple Twix. Use a three tight end set and go heavy, just like I did with the Twix bar.
It's the second best chocolate bar to the 100 grand.
No.
Yes, I'm right on this.
The problem I have with 100 grand
Is this a candy light up? Are we doing a candy light up right now?
I drool too much when I eat 100 grand. For some reason, if slip one of those whole things, like it generates, I don't know why, it's the texture and the flavor. I just get like a mouthful of
pretzel.
Of awesome spit.
It's essentially like a Milky Way with a Nestle Crunch umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
Like Reese's Pieces and really Reese's anything for life here.
I'm old enough to
That's
remember
the number one.
When it was a $100,000 bar. They shortened it. Well, just like Kentucky Fried Chicken was, you know, became KFC. Federal Express became FedEx. It was called the $100,000 bar.
That was some marketing
rich in
that
Carmel,
worked.
Nestle's $100,000 bar.
Also, yeah. Whatchamacallit's special place in my heart. Those are like a 90s thing, though. And then Texter reminds us, 708, I miss the peanut butter Twix. Remember those? Yes.
Yeah.
They were the greatest of all time.
The Force can now be with you in the form of movie memorabilia and a landfall moment for deep-pocketed Star Wars diehards. A slew of enviable props and costumes are heading to the auction block next month.
From Star Wars?
From Star Wars. The lineup of film collectibles include Anakin Skywalker's lightsaber from Revenge of the Sith.
Ooh.
A Stormtrooper helmet from Return of the Jedi. A promotional Darth Vader tour costume from the 1995 Star Wars Original Trilogy VHS release. Darth Maul's lightsaber from The Phantom Menace.
Oh, give me Darth. Isn't that the double-sided lightsaber?
That's the double red. Yep.
That's it. That's the one.
Senator Bail Organa's hero blaster from 2005's Revenge of the Sith. That's got a total, like, steampunk Art Deco kind of look going. That was Jimmy Smits's character.
Nothing compared to the double-sided lightsaber.
Now, these are the expected windfalls here. They believe that Skywalker's lightsaber and the Stormtrooper helmet are estimated at $82,000 and $206,000 respectively.
Small price to pay to control the galaxy.
There is an item that they think is going to fetch over $400,000.
Yes.
And this is for the nerds of the nerds. An actual Industrial Light and Magic light-up X-Wing filming miniature. So this is one of the real X-Wing fighters from Return of the Jedi that was photographed in their stop-action stuff.
Is Porkins in it?
No, Porkins is dead. He was killed in the original Star Wars.
I know,
but... Doesn't he get to celebrate his birthday today?
Oh, yeah, it is his birthday.
Happy birthday. Is he 35?
Yes.
Wow.
Such a child. He's the youngest of the hosts.
Yeah, but you know what? That he should enjoy 35 and married and a house in the suburbs with a pool and a happy, healthy family and a kid.
And a dog named Omar.
Yeah, he's ahead of the game. I think that should be a really what? Happy 35.
Why you gotta troll me, Dan?
I'm not subject.
I have
you.
None of those things.
I'm just saying he's entitled.
Have a divorce decree.
He's entitled to be very proud of where he's gotten at this stage.
I have some peanut butter whiskey in my closet.
You're just glad to see me.
Yeah, I said to Danny, he said to Mitch on Twitter, we promised to be reasonable with the sushi order for lunch today. I was like, do not be reasonable.
Why?
Ball out.
No reason to be reasonable.
Franchise has got to ball out. Happy birthday to the franchise.
Not as good as with a sushi course last night. First of all, we had the Madai Carpaccio with hibiscus salt, truffle vinaigrette, burrata, and preserved lemon.
What?
Just say some words.
And then it was 5 nigiri toro with caviar, uni unagi with quail egg, hamachi with yuzu shallot dressing, and seared
what?
Salmon.
Okay, is that a play in the Matt Nagy offense?
On two.
Unagi!
Check with me. Break. When we come back, we had an audible because Matt Miller had something come up. We had Pete Futek come up. He's going to step in. We got to talk about Brett Bielema being a blowhole dope. We got to talk about Ed Orgeron and...
Also being...
Yes, well, being Ed Orgeron.
Being the Henry VIII yeah. of college football.
That's your call on that one. He really is, right? I'm Henry VIII.
I won the national championship. I'm king now.
I'm going to go to practice and we'll have an Ed Orgeron orgy. It's Brandon.
Ew.
It's an orgy Ron. That's what we have around here right now. Down on the bayou. Got a special place for an orgy Ron.
sorry.
That is
well, you know, well, whatever. And is James Franklin going to be the next head coach at LSU or USC? And what the hell's going on with all of it? What's up with all that? Pete Futek will answer next. Yeah.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular-season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.